This is Amateur Logic, episode 195, for July 12, 2024. Amateur Logic is brought to you by ICOM. Fun, Sun, and QSO. Wherever you go, keep the fun going with one of ICOM's go-to portables or remote rigs. Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Amateur Logic. I'm George.
I'm Tommy.
I'm Emil.
And it's great to be back for a post-July 4th episode. Email, what are you going to be talking about tonight?
Well, yet another challenge from across the pond, George. Laird Nigel put the challenge out there, and I willingly stuck my foot in my mouth again, or I should say stuck my finger on my key. It's going to be learning CW, so that's what I'm going to be talking about.
Oh, cool.
Tommy, what are you going to be talking about?
Well, I got my technician license. I got my general, got my extra, so I found one more.
Driver's license?
I need to get that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got another license. I got my GMRS license.
Okay. Now, I'm going to be talking about this. You know, Apple came out with those neat little eyeglass things a while back. Well, that's not what this is.
It's a Colonel Clink monocle.
Yeah. This is a dead display out of a Yaesu 857D that I finally got around to replacing. There's finally a replacement available for a somewhat reasonable price. I'm going to say it a number of times when the episode gets here, not for the faint of heart.
I was going to say that's fun.
It is possible with a lot of, a lot of work. But we'll talk about that coming up. It is strange looking, isn't it?
It is. I just really never expected it to be like that.
Yeah, it just looks like a sunglass or something.
Yeah. Nothing. It's perfectly clear.
Yeah. Well, except it's tinted.
It's still clear.
Clear. Yeah. You could say
clearly
that.
Tinted.
Opaque.
Well, Tommy, you just got back from a trip.
Huntsville. I'm telling you, I've been to Huntsville a lot.
Yeah.
But while I was over there, this is my email. I guess I emailed myself. Anyway, went to the new Gigaparts store. You know, we were talking about that. I wondered if they had just bought the other part of that building.
Yeah.
But they're in a whole brand new place, and that place is huge. I think it used to be a Home Depot, if I remember right. I talked to Robbie. Yeah, there's
a Home Depot. Well, that would be big.
Yeah, it's huge, and got all kinds of stuff in there. It's really cool. This is not sponsored, by the way. I just went over there out of my own curiosity and see what I could find. But they got photography, astronomy stuff, telescopes, Raspberry Pis, and Arduinos. I should have got a picture of the Arduino or the Raspberry Pi shelf. It's actually on the end. It's not a lot of Arduino and Raspberry Pi stuff, but it's some. And I actually picked up a camera module for my Raspberry Pi. Probably playing with that sometime soon. There's the ham radio section in the back. A little bit of everything in there.
Looks like they got a lot of room for expansion, too.
Yeah, they do. He's planning on doing other stuff with it, too. Cool. I talked to Robbie and Patrick when I was in there. They saw me in there and spoke. Pretty neat to see those guys.
Wow. Yeah. That is cool.
Yeah.
I had been to the other store, I guess it was the original store. And it was nice, and it was a fair size. Oh, there's one more picture.
Yeah, it wasn't that big, though. Yeah, that's, I saved the best for last. They had a pretty nice ICOM display. They had a Yaesu display, too, over there. I think it might have been one of the other pictures. Just caught the edge of it. But nice display. They had a pretty good selection of stuff. They got a lot of antennas on the wall. Had some Heil audio gear in there. A bunch of stuff. It's a really cool place. So if you're over that way, go check it out.
Email you. I thought you were going to say you put your foot on the pedal, but no, you put your hand on the key. Is that?
Yep. I got my, as they call it, I'm learning, right? The new terms, the new methods. They call it the fist. right?
Fist.
So I'm learning my fist, and wow, it's very interesting. There's some different methods to learn, but as usual, the ARRL has a good starting point.
George, Tommy, Mike, Amateur Logic TV viewers. I'm in the shack today, getting ready to embark on my foray into learning Morse code via CW. Been having the rigs for a long time with it in it, never really used it. I did use some of the computer modes for copying and also sending. I've made CW contacts, but it's the cheating method, so time to bite the bullet and start figuring out how to do this by ear and by fist, as they call it. Found a really good resource from the ARRL on this front. There's a book here, Morse Code Operating, that they put out. I've read through it once already, probably going to read it a few more times, and taught me quite a bit already about the different methods of learning to copy as well as to send, and also some things to use online. So I'll also go over and cover some of the functions and features of the rigs and what that means for me. So join me on my first adventure into learning the code. I know it's probably pretty basic, but one of the first things I learned was that there are different types of keys to use, and the type that I picked to start learning with is the straight key, where you're literally making the dicks and ahs with the keys and the contacts here. So I was trying to figure out why is this elect key or electric key. So I broke out the wonderful documentation and manual that ICOM provides. And sure enough, I found that for the ports on my radio, on the back of the radio versus the front of the radio here, there is a place specifically for that straight key to be plugged into. So I wired it up and see the wires back there, and put it into the port on the back of the radio as shown in the manual. So right off the bat, the straight keys that I have, one I made and one I bought, you got to know how to plug it into your radio. So there's the first step. One of the other things I picked up from the ARRL's Morse Code Operating for Amateur Radio book was that there are two common methods of starting out and learning, the Farnsworth method and the Koch method. Hope I'm saying that right. But basically, the first one is the Farnsworth method is learning the characters a little bit faster than what you would begin learning slow code, but you're actually learning them faster, and then eventually the spaces in between the characters are exaggerated. There's a spacing and timing in between the characters when you first start learning that you have to get used to. So in the Farnsworth, it's got some larger durations in between the letters to give you time to copy, but they don't want you to run into a speed barrier. So the other one is the Koch method, where they start with groups of letters so that you can get used to the patterns more. And I think I'm going to be pretty successful probably using something like that, because as we probably all know, when you're listening, there's patterns that we probably all recognize. and that's a group of characters, CQ, right, that I think we probably all heard. And the Kutch method, I want to say, increases in that complexity as you go forward and you keep learning other patterns. So you start getting used to hearing the words in the sequence of letters. I know I've actually listened to the trailing Morse code of repeaters and picked up on the slash R over time. It's just things that I've picked up unconsciously, but now I'm learning it formally, I understand why they would do that, or pattern learning. And as a musician, I think I'm going to probably pick up a lot of that. So, you know, whether it's 73... you know, you start getting used to that pattern of what that sounds like. And I have also noticed that the tapping, you can actually hear the tapping besides the code that's coming out of the radio. But there's a tapping pattern or a rhythm. If you're a drummer like George, you can probably get used to that tapping pattern and rhythm. So lots to learn and lots of neat topics in there from the book, from the ARRL. As well as plenty of help from what I'm finding online and apps and other types of things. So we'll take a look at some of that as well.
Doggone cheap, Emil.
Yeah, you know, I just decided to dive right into it, thanks to Nigel and his challenges of late. So
there you go. That's the only way
to keep it on the roll.
He challenged Tommy and I too, but we haven't.
I resisted so far. Yeah.
We didn't take the bait yet. We'll see.
Honestly, if I were retired or something and had time, I would like to learn it. I honestly would. When I used to live in Virginia and I was in high school, my friend and I started learning it, and I pretty much had it. But then we moved, and I never did get my license and stuff. I think I probably told that story.
Tommy was thinking about it there and saying, well, he would want to learn it with a paddle. But is that the way to learn it, Emil?
I haven't used a paddle yet, so I get the idea. In fact, when I first plugged my straight key into the front jack, I noticed it was repeating the da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it was in the electronic key mode.
Yeah.
So... I haven't used the paddle yet, but I do understand the concept of it.
I think
it seems like it would be easier.
Well, I think, timing. Yeah, if you got it down, it would be. If you didn't, it would be a catastrophe. I mean, because it's like a machine gun. That thing would go off.
When we tried to get me to send something on that, and you were trying to decode it with that...
Yeah,
I don't remember if it was that little MFJ box or software, whatever it was at the time, but it was catastrophe too.
Yeah, you know, I've done 100 words a minute before, but it was with an Arduino program I wrote. It sounded like some kind of digital mode, but the thing actually sent and decoded it. But yeah, one day, maybe in retirement, I'll get around to play.
You have to get your bionic arm out to do 100 words a minute.
Yeah. I've used FL Digi. I've made contacts. If you look at my logs, you'll see CW contacts, but it's always been some form of keyboard and or cheating with HRD, FL Digi, CW Skimmer, all of those things to help me on the receive side. So I'm diving straight in to learn how to hear it.
All right. Well, we'll be interested in watching your progress on that.
Don't wait for the ham college section to come out on that.
All right.
We've got a special treat tonight. Our friend Terry, who is in the chat room right now, 2E0IPK, sent us a video. We've had some videos from Terry before. He's over across the pond there.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Terry, 2E0IPK. I've been thinking about going out portable. And I do it quite a lot now, actually, when the weather lets me. I was having problems. I was taking my Nano VNA out, and it was just taking too long to set up. It's all fiddly. You've got to do this, you've got to do that. You go from that to that. And I like it. I actually like it. But I was only going to use it as an antenna analyzer. So I've never updated it. So I thought, I need to sort it out. So I purchased one of these. This is a Rig Expert AA 230 Zoom. And it comes from the Ukraine. And it's brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant. I mean, you know, this has saved me a lot of time. I went out portable the other week and I was set up because I actually have a ground spike with my my super antenna. And I was set up, I think, in about 10 minutes, if that. That's a table, about 3,000 batteries, which I'm actually looking at one of those that Tommy's got, the Blue Yeti thing. And it's just ridiculous, you know, the amount of time it took. But this, 10 minutes. And it's got a USB-B on the bottom of it, so that if you want to hook it up to your computer, you can do that. No problem at all. It's about £325 I paid for this. I don't know what that would be in dollars, but that's what I paid for it. And I really love it. Absolutely brilliant piece of work they've done on this. It's actually got an end connector on the top. I don't know if you can see that, but it's got an end connector. But they supply an adapter for the with an SO239, and that's it. That just fits on there. Absolutely brilliant. Well worth the money. So anyway, I'll put this little video together. So you might have seen the show on the show. So show on the show or whatever. Anyway, this is Terry 2E0 IPK. Might be another call sign later because it's changing. Anyway, hope you like the video. Okay, when I'm out, I use a super antenna, which I've got to say is a really great little thing to use. I love it. But the only thing with this is that if you use, which you have to use, a slider thing that comes with it. Well, this is a slider, but this is the little rule. And it tells me, like, 20 metres, I'm just outside it there. Which weren't a bad little guess there, really, for me. So you try to get it as best you can. And that covers the whole of 20 metres. So it's very hard to work it out. So I'd like to work it somewhere in the middle so that I don't have to use, basically, my tuner while I'm out. Because I use an FT891 and it doesn't have built-in tuner. So I need to sort out another way of doing it. So this is set for 14150, and I've got plus or minus 200 kilohertz either way. So we'll set that going. And as you see, I mean, that really isn't good anyway, not for 14. So I'm not happy with that at all. But how do I do it with the other bands? Do I have to keep reprogramming it? I could actually just take a little snapshot. We go down here. We've got multi SWR now. If I hit the OK button there, and then if I press the OK button again, you start seeing it go. A 7.1 is 4.5, which is way too high, as you know. 14150, 2.9, which isn't good. We've just seen that on there. That isn't too good at all. And these are the best figures. 21.4, 2.5, I'd get away with that. I'd get away with the one above it using the tuner. But I'd like to have it tuned in a bit better anyway to start off with. 28.4 is 4.7678 changing. 145 doesn't matter about because I haven't got a VHF antenna on it. So that's why that's reading 12. If I was to put my VHF antenna on that, that would be below 1.5. Be well below it. So yeah, I mean it's a good unit, this. It's a lovely unit. It's really worth getting these. And as I said, it helps Ukraine out immensely. And well, there you go. I just find it useful. You go out, you take the Nano VNA, and you've got no chance. But this is so quick, you know, literally I could just tune in. Yep, there you go, wallop, done. So anyway, that's basically how it is. All the time I was going out portable, I was using this, the Nano VNA, which I must say that I actually saw first of all on Amateur Logic, but it's just too time consuming. You know, you don't really get a lot of time over here because, I mean, we're famed for our poor weather sometimes. I mean, it's not anywhere near as bad as you get in the States. Nowhere near as bad. I wouldn't even pretend it is. But it's more consistent, I think. You get it and it goes. Ours stays for weeks and, you know, you'll be saying, oh, I'll go out portable. Oh, no, I can't. It's raining. It happens all the time. But this is a great thing. I like it, but it's just too time consuming. That's why I've gone for this. Well, I hope you like that. It's a little bit of experience, and I've had a bit of a problem putting the video together anyway because of hospital appointments and my daughter, who needs a lot of attention. I mean, she's 34, but you know, she's got autism, and she's quite bad sometimes. So anyway, hope you like it, and I'll catch you all soon. Bye for now.
Well, thanks for that video, Terry.
Yeah, thanks, Terry.
Yep.
Guess what?
Look out. That looks familiar.
Yeah. I've had one for several years. This is one of my favorite analyzers right here. And as Terry said, it's quick. Yeah, a couple of things you need to set up on it, just depending on what you want to measure, but does pretty much everything, and I can even measure FM broadcast antennas with this, and it works where I haven't had much luck doing AM or FM broadcast antennas with other analyzers. But a good rig.
It's pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I used it that day. I was checking my antenna in my truck when I swapped rigs in there.
Yep.
But it worked nice. It's the interface is a little bit funny to me.
Yeah, you get used to it.
I'm kind of used to the MFJ ones, but it was nice. Did the job.
Thanks for sharing that video with us, Terry.
Did you tell them how much it cost here?
In the U.S., what was it, $349?
$349.
Yeah. So,
it's not too bad.
No, not too bad. He also sent us a photo, Tommy. He wanted to share this with you since you weren't really sure about it, and he I want to make sure you didn't miss out.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
You don't ship any of those over here, though. I hate for you to go to the expense of that.
Well, they're ready to eat.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
Ready.
Ooh.
And look, they're nice and, you know, cold. Keep refrigerated as you squirm down.
Yeah. Not suitable for home freezing.
Man,
though.
They just expired, too.
Well, I hope he didn't ship them.
he wouldn't do that. He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Eddie pulled a dad joke, y'all. He said, Tommy, you might feel eel after you eat that.
Yeah, no kidding. I feel kind of eel looking at the at the picture.
Yeah, and he does say they're awful. So.
Yeah. He said that before when I was talking about them.
I can believe it. I don't think I would find out for myself.
But apparently people eat them, though, because they wouldn't keep packaging them up. Somebody's eating them.
Yeah, well, somebody eats Vegemite.
I don't think I could deal with the Vegemite more than the eels. But.
We're going to be back in just a moment because we got a lot more to go yet, so don't go away.
Fun, sun, and QSO. Wherever you go, keep the fun going with one of ICOM's go-to portables or remote rigs. The IC705 and IC7300 radios both feature a large touchscreen with real-time spectrum scope and waterfall display for intuitive functions and setting operation. So kick back, enjoy the breeze, and make those QSOs with ease. The IC705 portable radio provides base station features and performance in the palm of your hand. From HF to 50, 144, or 440 megahertz, enjoy a wide variety of bands in the D-Star DV, single sideband, CW, RIDI, AM, and FM modes. This handheld also includes an RF direct sampling system, wireless LAN and Bluetooth connectivity, an internal GPS receiver, and more. The IC7300 is an industry first to use an RF direct sampling system and an entry-level HF radio. This high-performance radio includes an audio scope function, IP+, class-leading RMDR and phase noise characteristics, 15 discrete bandpass filters, and a built-in automatic antenna tuner. This compact and innovative radio will far exceed your expectations. Bring the fun wherever you are by going remote. The optional RSBA1 remote control software allows you to operate your ICOM from a portable PC. For those of you with an IC7300, head on over to ICOMAmerica.com and download the latest firmware to get ICOM's new digital pre-distortion capabilities. This technology corrects nonlinear distortion at the final amplifier stage by applying inverse distortion at the pre-distortion section in the FPGA unit in advance. For more information about ICOM's amateur radios and to locate a dealer, visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur today. For the love of ham radio. Thanks, ICOM, for sponsoring Amateur Logic.
They got a new...
A new radio.
Yeah, I saw this on Santa Ray's Facebook thing today. He said he found one in his trunk. ID52A+. Good-looking radio, silver.
Yeah.
60th anniversary edition. I'm sure there's something different on it, but I hadn't had a chance really yet to look and see what the differences are. But it's a good-looking radio.
Cool.
Neato.
Yeah, there's a lot of comments in the chat room about those eels, and I think the takeaway is nobody wants to eat them, at least nobody in the chat room.
And he said it's eel-advised.
Yeah.
You know, he's right about that Nano VNA, though. It's really cool. There's a lot of things. If you're going to use it at home in your shack or something, it's a great tool. But if you want to just take it out and really check an antenna or something, there's a lot of work to it. It's kind of a little bit of a hassle.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. You know, back in field day, I pulled out my old Yaesu FT857D, which I have not turned on in years. And I used it for a digital mode transceiver. And I had to hook up Ham Radio Deluxe to it so I could tell what frequency I was on, because the displays are notorious for going bad in those rigs if you get them out in the heat. And this one lived in a vehicle for 2 or 3 years, and the display was practically gone. But I came up with a solution eventually. It took a number of years, but I think these are just out because I haven't heard much about them yet. But take a look. This was my first HF rig, a Yaesu FT857D. This one has seen better days. Notice the lines in the display and how hard it is to read some things like, maybe what band you're on, what mode you're operating. There's a known problem with these rigs, and that is lines of missing dots in the display. And that generally happens when they've been in a hot vehicle or they're getting older. There's some type of adhesive on the display to hold things together, and that goes bad. You can try heating it up inside with a heat gun, and you'll get some of the lines back temporarily, but there's no real fix for the display itself other than to replace it. I saw online where somebody said Yaesu at one point would replace the whole display board inside here for around $177. Now, that was a couple of years back, and the displays were back-ordered and hard to obtain. There were no other parts that you could use to replace it. Now, fortunately, someone has put together a replacement display kit. It's a little different than the one that's in here. It looks virtually the same with a couple of exceptions, but the price is less than $50, so I thought I would give it a try and see if I could put some life back into this old rig. There's a couple of small Phillips head screws on the rear of the head unit you'll need to remove. Then that back cover will just pull off carefully. Once you're inside, you'll see a ribbon cable connecting the audio connectors. It's a little piece of tape holding it on the PC board. Just remove that piece of tape,
Then the connector it's plugged into has a little slide that you have to move up. Once you've done that, you can pull the ribbon cable out of the connector, and we'll set the audio board aside. There are a few other screws on the rear of the board that we'll need to remove in order to get the board out. Contrary to what I did here, there's no need to take the VFO knob off. However, we will need to unplug its cable. Then we can just slide it through the wide opening in the board. For the volume and squelch control, there is a nut that has a couple of slots cut into it. I used a pair of tweezers to get those broke loose and then just a dental tool to spin it around where I could get it out. I decided to use my hot air reflow tool to melt the solder holding it to the PC board so I could remove the old display. Of course, using a little solder wick was necessary to clean off the traces on the board. We're going to clean all that gook out that's left on the inside here where the foam is melted. I'm going to use a little denatured alcohol, Q-tip, paper towel, whatever it takes. From what I could find, Yaesu, about 3 years ago, was selling these panels for around $177 with a display on them, new display, the whole panel, you would replace it. I read where people were having trouble getting those. They were back-ordered one thing or another. I'm not even sure if they sell them now. Doing a little searching on the internet, though, I came up with an alternative. This came from AliExpress. It's a little bit different than the one that was there. The display is about 4 pixels less on the left side, and I think one across the bottom, but basically it's going to display everything that we need. This was less than $50, so I haven't lost a lot if this doesn't work. Well, I've lost radio maybe, but it was in bad shape anyway. Now, this works out a little bit different. Rather than being like the original, where you had this little piece of ribbon here that folded over and soldered down to the board, this one has a PC board with some chips on it to adapt it down to the data format required for the Yaesu. You lay that PC board on there, you line up the pins, and you solder it right there. And that's what I'm going to do now. After we've done that, we will fold this over in a Z shape, I believe they said. We'll look at that when we get to it. And here will be our new display. The little frame that held the display board in has got to be modified slightly, so there'll be a hole for these chips to fit through. There's a little light reflecting panel here inside the mount. So we need to pull that out. Well, I cracked it. So I'll have to glue this back together. And that's roughly what we need to remove. I'm going to try with an X-Acto knife and hopefully I don't destroy this altogether. Now the question is, how do I solder this? There's a little bit of solder stuck on the bottom here where it's been tinned. Will that be enough if I just heat it up? Will that stick to what's on here? Should I use some solder paste? Should I just try to solder it by hand with a soldering iron? I don't know. We're going to have to find out. We line up our pins in line with what's on the board. And we'll double check to make sure that we're lined up with the pins on the board. I've already started soldering the board for the new display into place. You can see I laid it down here, lined up the pads, taped it down. Now I had to use some 30 gauge wire wrap wire to make these connections. I couldn't come up with any better way to do it. So I'll show you how I did it. I've soldered these two. I've soldered these three. And I've soldered one here. These are not connected. These four over here were not connected either. If we look at the layout here on the website, we can see these are not used. Then we've got a 5-volt. That's this pin right here. So I've soldered one jumper from the new board down to the Yaesu board. Right here are 3 grounds, so you label them as 0 volts. And directly below it on the Yaesu board, the 3 pins were ganged together, so I just soldered all that together. Now there's going to be, they say here, 11 data lines. I haven't counted them, but I'll take their word for it. We've got to solder all of these down one jumper wire at a time, so that's what I'm going to do. Here's the way I'm making that happen. If you don't have good vision, strong magnifying glasses, and good soldering skills, I would suggest you don't try this yourself. Got a little piece of the wire wrap wire. I'm going to lay it in place where it needs to go. I'm going to put a little piece of tape on top to hold it down. I'll push it down to get it flat against the Yaesu board on the end. And I want to make sure that that lines up on the top board and the bottom. I've been using some liquid flux. I really should have put that on before I laid the wire on there, but I didn't. So I'll do that now. I use this Kester 2331ZX flux pin. I'm trying to only get the flux on the pin that I want to solder right now. I've got an extremely fine point here. This is a surface mount size soldering tip, but it's going to take something that small to get between all these traces. You can see that's quite difficult to do without getting solder onto the pad beside the one you're aiming at. Let's be sure that one stuck and is okay. And it doesn't move around, so I'll do the top side now. When I did that, the bottom moved, so I had to re-tack it again. Let's see if we're okay. Okay, looks like both ends of that are good. It did not go over to the other pads beside it, so I'll clip this wire off and move on down till I've done them all. Well, I've soldered all the necessary connections now. But here they are. This was tough and time-consuming. They are actually separate. They're not touching each other. So hopefully this is going to work. As I mentioned earlier, if you don't have good soldering skills and a good way to see this, I wouldn't try it. We'll put it back together now, and let's see what we got. The original Yaesu display that I took out had 133 by 33 dots. You can't really buy those out on the open market, so the one that I bought as a replacement here only does 128 by 32 dots on the LCD. What that means is you're going to lose 4 columns here on the left, and you're going to lose the bottom row in the display. So after several hours of work, pulling the old one out, cleaning up the insides, and installing the new one, does it work? And it does. It wasn't easy to do, took quite a bit of time to pull off, but it does work. The only place you'll really notice these 4 columns on the left will be in the SWR position. I don't believe you'll see the bar graph for the meter there. And at the bottom line here is missing. So things will be a little bit truncated across there. Say instead of SCN, you can see that's green, that's PRT. I'm not sure what that is. I'm not used to the menus on here. So as we scroll through, we'll have to kind of subliminally add in the bottom dots where they belong there. But there's no vertical lines anymore in here, so I would say this is a win. $50, yeah, saved an old rig. I can use it for digital modes or something. So there you go. Once again, not recommended unless you've got good soldering skills, patience, and good eyesight and good magnifiers. Wow. And a steady hand.
Well, those are some tiny little traces, man.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that was so 30-gauge wire.
Together. Yeah. That alone.
It was a little tougher than I was expecting, but not undoable. My hands don't shake yet. And yet. I expect one day they will. But
maybe not.
I was able to do it. But, you know, if you're not real good at soldering, don't even try it. Because I smeared across two or three pads and a number of times and had to take the solder wick, clean it back off, and redo them.
Yeah, Tom in the chat room said that's good soldering skills, patience, and a lack of sanity.
All together, yeah. And it's good for a backache, too.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. After about 3 or 4 hours of leaning over and trying to do that, but got the rig straightened out, and hopefully that will last. I don't know.
Well, you can see it now. I mean,
yeah,
just that little off the bottom. I mean, that's a little. It's not the end of the world. It's much better than it was.
Yeah, that rig will probably end up being used for digital modes exclusively because I hadn't done anything with it in years, and it worked okay for that. We're good for that.
You don't even really need that anyway for a digital mode.
It would be nice to know that you're on the right frequency.
Yeah. Well, the software sets the frequency on the radio.
Yeah?
Wouldn't be surprised if it didn't do yours.
I think it did.
But anyway, it's nice. Yeah. It's a nice repair. It looks a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. It would have been nice if it had all the dots. Not bad. I mean, it's a heap better than what it was. So, I was glad to find that at that price too.
For a couple of rows of dots, you saved probably $100-something.
Yeah, more than 100. And I don't even know if you can get the Yaesu displays anymore.
Yeah, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, it's an older rig. They don't sell those anymore.
One day I need to get my Yaesu out and plug it up. It hadn't had power on it. I don't even know how long.
Well, same with mine.
12, 15 years probably.
Well, I don't think it'd been. Maybe it had been that long. It'd been a long time. But anyway, this revived. Email, you had a post. I think it was a post you wanted to share with us tonight.
I think so. So even though Hurricane Beryl is gone, while it was here, and as it was passing through, it showed us how important it is to keep watching these things well inland. The NWS Shreveport office had a pretty busy day from about 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. as it came on shore and rode up the Texas and Louisiana coasts and streaked across the country. But I do remember seeing on their X pages that they reported 67 tornado warnings between 12 and 8 p.m. Wow. And as we all probably are still seeing in the news, there's like 800,000 plus people out of power in Texas alone. So this is, we're right in the heat of hurricane season for us. So we always keep an eye on these things. But wow, what a busy day they had and all the people are having from this. So, you know, stay alert. Stay watchful and get a plan together, right? Be prepared.
Yeah. You know, my son lives in Houston, and they were up here during the hurricane. That they had planned to come up here anyway. And he went home today. I haven't talked to him, so I'm hoping they got electricity back.
Well, I'll be surprised because I have a coworker in there on the call today. They've been without since the storm hit, and there's still no sign, no clue when they're going to have it back on for them. They live right in the middle of Houston.
Well, Tommy, you're bona fide now.
You call that. Yeah, I got my GMRS official. I'm official.
Look out.
Yeah, what? I kept toying around with the idea of it, and then, I was talking to you about it, and mm-hmm. you said that they were putting up a repeater around, so I looked, and they do have one over in Pearl, not far from here. Mm-hmm. So, I went ahead and applied and got it, and I just thought I'd share it, how the process, if anybody else is interested in it. Well, I kind of got a wild hair and decided I wanted to try to get my GMRS license. It's not like the ham stuff where you have to actually study, take a test for it. Anybody can get it. You just need to fill out the paperwork, go through the check process, and pay your fee. I think it's $35, but let's find out. I thought I'd just share this with you guys, just in case any of you are interested in getting it yourself. To apply, you need to go to this URL. I'll put it there at the bottom of the screen. It'll also be in the show notes. You need to log in with your FRN or your FCC registration number and your password. If you don't have that on this same page, you can register with the FCC and get all that stuff set up. So I'm going to assume that you already have that and go forward from there. So I'm going to put in my FRN and my password and get logged in. I don't plan on doing a lot of GMRS content on here. I just wanted to get my license. There are a few repeaters that are coming up in the area. Up until recently, there's been absolutely zero GMRS activity that I'm aware of. I've listened on my receiver to a few of the channels, but I haven't heard anything. But there are a few repeaters coming up, so I thought I'd get this just so I could kind of, even though I can listen in, maybe I can participate some. I don't know. It's just something else I wanted to get, another license. So let's go over here and apply for a new license on the left. And we'll go pick the service we want. So it's the very last one, Zed Alpha, General Mobile Radio Service. So let's go ahead and continue. Does this filing request special temporary authorization? No. Am I exempt from FCC fees? I wish, but I'm not. No, and I'm not exempt from regulatory fees either. So let's go to the next. Put my information in. And let's go ahead and go continue. Has applicant or any party directly or indirectly controlled had been convicted of a felony? No. Next. Okay, there's my information. There's my stuff. Yep, all that's right. Continue to certify. Well, there it goes. Okay, general statements. Waves claim to use any particular frequencies. The applicant licensee waves any claim to use particular frequency or of the cover electromagnetic spectrum as against the regulatory power of the United States. Basically just says you're going to follow the rules. And I'll go ahead and sign. Submit the application. Continue the payment. That's all, and it is $35. So now I've got to log in here. Into cores. You're going to need to make sure your cores stuff is updated as well. Helps if I put the right password in. Okay, ensuring account security, extra layer protection. We need to send the code to your email box. So let's go ahead and do that. Okay. We're in. Now we got to pay. Register new. Here we go. View and pay regulatory fees. Surprise, it's not at the top. Regulatory fee manager. Oh, pay application fees, bills. Let's try this one. FRN Financial. Okay, you got the green light on that. And this is it. Let's make a payment. And you'll excuse me if I don't share my information after this point, but here you go in and you put in your credit card information. It says it's going to be $35. So put in your info. It says it could take 3 to 5 days for the money to be withdrawn, but I just heard my text go off and it's already happened. So I'll go ahead and print that for my own records just for the heck of it. But at any rate, I guess we're done. It's pretty easy. It's nothing like the extra amateur radio test, but you don't get the same privileges either. It's more for personal communications, for people that don't care to do the studying and just want to communicate with their family or whatever on trips or things like that. There are people that use it for emergencies as well. So anyway, that's what I hope to listen in on with some of that comes up. Severe weather, things like that. So we'll see how it goes. Again, just another thing to play around with. And I don't intend on doing a lot of GMRS content, but we'll see how it goes. Anyway, this was actually submitted about 1:30 p.m. on Sunday, July the 7th. So I'll let you know when it all gets approved and everything's good to go. 73. It's Tuesday morning, 6:30 a.m., 6:29 a.m. I got an email from the FCC saying that want to notify me of my recent grant of my application, commission, blah, 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 yada, yada. You can read it if you want. But here's an authorization link, so let's see what happens. Oh, it downloaded automatically. Didn't even have to log in. It looks like I got my GMRS license already. Call sign is WSDR379. So that was pretty fast. I guess it should have been, though, because all I really had to do was pay, fill out the application. No test of grade or anything like that. So anyway, it was pretty easy. If any of you guys are interested in getting yours, it's not a replacement for ham stuff, but it's just another communications method. So anyway, I thought I'd just give it a try, like I said. 73.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, I need a radio sometime or another. I have no idea what to get.
So tell us, guys, on this license here, okay, you can have GMRS repeaters. Is that another license?
No. Somebody has to be the owner of it, but it's to use it, it's the same. Like, the person who puts it up has to have a license.
Has to, I mean, can Tommy Trustee. Put up one now?
Yes, with his call.
Okay.
I ain't got my D-Star repeater working yet.
So, if I want to talk on his GMRS repeater, I would have to pay $35.
You need a license.
And a license.
And it's good for anybody in your immediate family as well. It's not just you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's anybody in your immediate family.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
it's what, 35 for 10 years. Huh?
Like my ham license, when I renewed, I got a card to cut out, put in my wallet. But there's nothing like that here. So I actually Googled it, and I see a lot of people sell customized ones with your picture on it or whatever, if you want to have one done. But they don't really give you a card to carry.
For an extra $35, I can get you one.
Yeah, I bet you can. That's all right. I think I'll just write it down and put it in my wallet.
Yeah.
But anyway, cool. I need a radio, so if you got any ideas for decent radios, send them to me. I don't have any idea what to get yet, so I don't think
there
Icon
you go.
Makes
there,
GMRS
There's
radios.
An idea.
What is that? I can't see.
It's one of those Redivis.
Rectech?
Redivis, yeah. I use it for the local repeater here, and it's up on a water tower. The club uses it for Skywarn, and Eddie in the chat room says they use it for the same thing. They a bunch of hams, or, you know, they have ham licenses plus GMRS, but
during our net, we actually listen for FRS and GMRS traffic to relay into the NWS, like Glenn. He's a part of the chat.
All right. So, so y'all are hams, and we can modify radios and do stuff like that, but you couldn't use one of your handy talkies and open it up frequency wise, put that frequency in there, and you could listen, but you can't transmit legally like
unless it's emergency, right?
Yeah.
It's it's not type rated for it, but you know, Mars mod in emergency, that's a doable situation. Whatever works, right? All means necessary.
Yeah, don't quote us on that though. You know, if it comes down to it, but yeah, okay. Cool. I have an email here.
A real email?
A real, well, it's two or three of them. It's an email chain here.
Oh.
If such a thing exists anymore.
Chain mail.
Yeah. Now, this came from Bruce, N3BAL, and originally said he saw a video that might be interesting. It was a guy flying a kite with a wire on it for an antenna. And he said he was thinking of doing the same thing for field day on the shore at a spot near where he lives in Maryland. Of course, staying away from any power lines. And he was wondering, did he need to be concerned about, radiation, RF radiation, coming back into his HF rig from a nearby tower? And maybe that would destroy the receiver. I wrote him back and told him, well, you know, I haven't flown kites, which is a lie because when I was a kid, I flew kites, but not his antennas. But, around the fields of AM transmitters, I've got some experience with long pieces of metal. They do.
Yeah, it don't seem like a good idea.
Yeah, they will re-radiate some stuff and create sparks and different things. So I just told them I'd be careful if I did it, near an AM tower. I don't know if you'd have any problem from a cell phone tower or something like that. Such a high frequency. But maybe put some attenuators in line right at your receiver and then pull them out one at a time till you got down to where you could see you weren't overloading your receiver. Get it within a safe range. And didn't hear anything back from him because this was originally back in April. We had talked about that. So I asked him, did he fly the kite for field day? And he said, no, he didn't. And he mentioned he went to a flea market and purchased a Simpson 260 multimeter for $40. Well, this was at Hamvention he did that. Found one for $40. It had some problems measuring resistance, and he found a bad resistor, replaced it. Everything else was okay with it, except a D-cell had leaked in there. Must have been a deer cell. I don't know.
Probably.
Yeah.
If it's in a Simpson 260, it could have been a Rayovac.
Rayovacs don't leak.
30-year-old ones do.
30-year-old ones do.
Probably. Anyway, he said he wimped out on field day as usual and worked a 1E station using solar power and generator in the basement. The heat was brutal. I don't see how anybody stayed outside for any length of time. I don't think they could they, Emil?
I guess they could. I mean,
it was heat in Maryland, Emil, not like in Louisiana or Mississippi.
It's a different heat.
Different heat. Yeah, it's probably just as bad up there. Anyway, he ran WSJTX for FT8 and CQR log to record his contacts. Eventually, he's going to leave home, though, and go out in the field somewhere, running a Raspberry Pi set up with a 10-inch small LCD monitor. And, yes, Bruce, if you do that, you will totally redeem yourself. So, let us know.
Yeah.
And any of you out there, you doing anything interesting, send us an email. You can just send it to our first name @amateurlogic.tv. That doesn't mean our first name. That means Tommy, George, Emil.
They're also Mike. At the credits of the show at the end of every show.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And Mike is not with us tonight, by the way. We got an email from him earlier this week. I think they have 4,200 students they're trying to wrangle in right now. He works for a school system. And
I didn't know he was a wrangler.
But
apparently
well,
he's got some wrangling to do, though.
I think he's an IT.
Yeah,
wrangler. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of kids.
We hope he'll be able to join us again soon. But he's pretty snowed under right now. And with that, I think we have reached the bottom of the sheet here, so to speak.
Literally.
Yep. Any final thoughts before we get out of here tonight, Tommy?
Nope. Wonder what I'm going to do next month. No. It's a good show. It's interesting. I really liked the project you did there, the display.
Yeah.
That's kind of encouraging. Well, that's probably going to help a lot of people.
Yeah, and that's one reason I went ahead and did it, is because when I looked and did searching, there wasn't hardly anybody talking about those. I could see where a few people had bought them and said they installed them, but there was absolutely no how to install them anywhere. There's a guy who you can send your rig to, and he will put a recycled board in it with one of these displays, but he didn't show how he did it or any of that. So I thought, well, I'll show a how-to for those brave enough and with the soldering skills could possibly do it. So it is possible. We've seen it right here.
I'd probably tackle that.
Yeah. Just patience and plenty of solder wick. You could do it. And a tiny tip. You're not going to do it with your Weller soldering iron, Emil.
All right.
Or your gun, you know.
Yep. I got a little one.
Yep. Need a little surface mount tip, and you could probably pull that off. Emil, any thoughts down there?
Absolutely. Happy noisy HF nights. Happy summer. Happy heat. Happy hurricane season. Stay alert. Keep watching it, and be prepared. But whatever you do, keep it cheap.
Keep it cheap.
It's so cheap, the lights are off.
In the dark.
Oh, yeah,
man.
I can't afford lights.
I'm wearing one of my pride and joys here. This is a shirt from our friend Andy Anderson.
Yeah.
He gave to me a number of years ago.
I've got one of those. If I'd known, I'd have worn my Andy shirt tonight, too.
This is an actual Hawaiian shirt. Came from there.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know that they sewed it there, but it's got it stamped in the label. So that's where he got it. Emil, he's got on some kind of classy shirt there. I don't know. We haven't determined the origin yet.
This is for when it's a dry fit golf shirt for when we want to be seen, because we have bad habits down here of hitting other people.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is one of my golf shirts.
Okay. All right. But Tommy now, he would be the best looking ham at the next ham fest.
I got the classy stuff on today.
Where do you get that stuff, Tommy?
Well, it's funny that you ask. You can get one just like it, actually, at shop.spreadshirt.com/amateurlogic. You can get cups, hoodies. I think there's backpacks. There's Ham College swag on there, too, if you want Ham College. shop.spreadshirt.com/amateurlogic.
Between shows, if you'd like to find out what's going on with, with us here or people in the group, we've got several different social media outlets you could join there. facebook.com/groups/amateurlogic.tv.
Yep, you can follow us on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it this week, at Amateur Logic.
And you can even go to groups.io/g/amateurlogic and subscribe and get all of our emails.
Yes, which are relatively few, really. Pretty much only emails when there's going to be a live stream happening and then whenever the show has been posted.
Yeah. So that's good for if you're not a social media person, a Facebook or whatever. That way you get informed. So that's a good alternative.
Mm-hmm. And we want you to be informed.
We do.
That's only if you want to be, though. So it is optional. Also, you might have questions like, where could I get that display that George showed in this particular episode right here? There's a place you can get such details.
Yeah, or hey, what was the show that y'all did that we had something on?
Where did Tommy apply for his GMRS license?
Oh, if I wanted to know that, I'd go to amateurlogic.tv/wiki, search for it.
You know, people ask me, and somebody did just this past week, what episode did y'all talk about? And I don't remember what it was now, but particular subject, and that's where we go to look it up. So it's you can find some of this stuff if you just go to the amateurlogic.tv website and type in the little search box there. But it's more detailed if you go to amateurlogic.tv/wiki.
Yeah.
And email, he's wearing the swag up there too. He's got the amateurlogic.tv headgear.
Yep, the headgear.
Which hasn't been dog-chewed yet.
It has not. But, you know, even if you don't want to wear it, it makes a tasty dessert topping for your dog.
They love it.
Yeah.
That's the origin of doggone cheap productions right there.
Except all the hats get expensive after you have to replace them that many times.
True. 7-3.
7-3, everybody.
7-3.
Smear a little Vegemite on the eel, it would go down easier.